That's a much better piece of evidence, or a much better scientific thing than a 3 foot long piece of scat. That's
right. Oh, I loved that though. That was fun.
Have you seen it?
Yeah.
He varnished it, and is it still in his freezer?
No, it's in his museum now.
He's got a museum too?
Yeah.
Oh wow! What's his museum about?
It's a Bigfoot museum.
Oh, of course, naturally.
But anyway, so they wanted them, or they wanted him to send them a sample of this scat, but he had varnished it, and they were afraid that it would ruin the chemicals inside. So they said, no, just take and cut it in half. And I said, man, I wish I'd have been there to see that. But anyway, so he cut it in half. It looked like a summer sausage.
From Omaha, Nebraska, the capital city of the historic Haunted Heartland, my name is Brian Corey, and it's my pleasure to welcome you all to this episode of Necronomicast, the finest in creepy conversations. My guest today for a conversation is with Harriet McFeely. At 77 years young, she is the curator of the Crossroads of America Bigfoot Museum and Research Center, located down the road in Hastings, Nebraska. I loaded up the van, took the kids, and spent the afternoon with Harriet and conducted this interview inside the museum in what's known as the Bone Room, and brought to you an incredible slice of life with an incredible individual. So here we are with Harriet McFeely in the Crossroads of America Bigfoot Museum and Research Center.
All right, well, here we are. I'm in the Crossroads of America Bigfoot Museum and Research Center in Hastings, Nebraska, with my friend Harriet McFeely, the Bigfoot lady. Harriet, how are you doing?
I am doing fantastic.
I am so glad to meet you, and I've been reading about you and hearing about you, and you have this great museum here just a couple miles down the road from Omaha, about about 2 hour drive, but it went super fast, and I can't wait to tear into this place. It looks amazing. But how long has this place been open?
We are going to have our fourth birthday in September.
And you opened this on your birthday?
Yes, I did. And of course, I'm only 39.
I don't know if I believe you.
Okay.
No, but what a cool thing. You opened this place up. You were 73 when you opened it. So that puts you about 78.
No. I will be 77.
77?
Yeah.
Well, forgive me.
Ooh, that's old.
So this place is incredible. So you opened this up, you just had all this Bigfoot memorabilia and evidence and all this stuff in your house, and you just decided to expand and build a museum.
That's right. I started collecting items when I was 8 years old. And a lot of things in here, other Bigfooters have donated to me. Mm-hmm. And like some of the casts on the wall were given to me. But the majority in the pictures are, everything was mine. And yes, I always thought I had a dining room, but I couldn't find it.
Right.
So when I got this museum, I had planned it so many times in my head that all I had to do is walk out on the walls and put the pictures up, because I already knew exactly where they were going.
So when you started collecting stuff, what happened in when you were eight that you started collecting stuff? What, right there?
When I was 8 years old, on May 29th, 1953, I came home from school. My dad was watching the news at noon hour. And when I walked in, Sir Edmund Hillary was on the way to the top of Mount Everest. And I was just hypnotized. Anyway, they took a picture on the way up, and it was a huge footprint on the track right where they were going, only it was in front of them. And they laid a pickaxe down to show the scale of the footprint. And I saw that, and as I said, I was 8 years old. I knew zero about anything. But I saw that and I believed it because I think on that day the temperature up there was like 40 below, mm-hmm. and the snow was deep, maybe, and kind of packed down, but it was probably 6 inches deep. And I thought, nobody in their right mind would be up here, especially barefooted in the snow. And so that was my beginning.
So that kind of got the ball rolling. Now, how have you seen Sasquatch?
Yes, I have.
Tell me about that.
A couple times. The first time I saw them was out in Colorado. It was an all-girl Bigfoot group, and we saw four of them at night. There was, I think, probably the male, the mom and the dad, and they had two kids. And I think the kids, I always thought they were twins because when I looked at them, their eyes were just about exactly level where mine are. That's, mm-hmm. that's how I'm trying to figure out everything, how tall it is. So that was my very first ever experience. I was so excited.
How old were you?
That was just about 8 years ago.
Was
really, because from when 1953, for one thing, there was two books in the library. That was it. Mm-hmm. There was nothing. But I kept on whatever, reading or studying. I've done that my whole life. But then, of course, your life happens. But then for 19 years, I took care of my husband. My husband and I took care of my mother for 19 years.
Oh, wow.
So I was not out. I never got to go out. I don't think I had a day off in 19 years. It was hard. But so then after she had passed on, then I began to get acquainted with people. I started going to Bigfoot conferences around the country, and I went to the ladies group. That was a blast. And that was my first viewing right there.
Yeah.
So
that was in Colorado.
Yeah.
So you opened, what, it's just amazing that you, you know, you took this passion and this, this strange topic. And I'm totally into Bigfoot. I got my Bigfoot shirt on.
I love that.
Yeah. Like I told you earlier, I had Bob Gimlin on the show, and seeing the Patterson Gimlin film. Now I was, you know, a kid when I saw it on a TV show. I think it was In Search Of the first time I saw it, and I couldn't, you know, not that I couldn't believe it, but I mean, I saw this and I was like, that has to be real. That absolutely has to be real. It's not a guy in a suit.
That's exactly what I thought.
And so, but I was born, you know, that happened in 67. 1967.
October 20th, 1967.
Right, and I was, you know, I wasn't born yet. So, what was it like? You know, you were 21 or so when that was recorded, and I'm sure you saw it sometime shortly after that, mm-hmm. or when it started making the rounds. Mm-hmm. What was it like, you know, in your 20s, seeing that for the first time?
That was so exciting. It was equal to Mount Everest, for sure. And also with that one, when I saw the footprint on Mount Everest, I believed it. I didn't think anybody was a hoaxer. Mm-hmm. And when I saw Patty walk down Bluff Creek, I was so surprised. I was astounded. I had so many emotions. But the one that I never had was, I never for a second believed that it was a fake. Never.
Yeah. I watched the videos where they break it down, they stabilize the footage, they compare this with that. And to me, it's still, after all these years, it still is like the definitive, I guess you would say, evidence or proof that these creatures exist, or at least one of them did, walking around out there. But, you know, the thousands of eyewitness accounts over the years, you can't discredit those.
Yes, I agree 100% with that. And, you know, from the first time I saw it, I believed it, and all the reasons that you said. And the one thing I like about all the investigations that they're still doing is every time they investigate it, it just proves it's the real deal.
Yeah.
That's what they all prove, I think.
Sure. And nobody's been able to say, well, here's the suit, and this is where it came from, and this guy made it.
Yeah.
None of that.
And the ones that say that, I think they're the ones that made it, and they're the hoaxer. It's not Patty. And by the way, on the 50th anniversary, they had a huge, big celebration in Bluff Creek, California.
Yeah.
And I got invited to go, and I went. I was so excited. And I actually walked right down the beach where Patty walked.
So you were there.
That was like a pilgrimage or something. It was, oh, gosh, that was fun. And it was so beautiful. And I was there exactly on October 20th. Exactly.
Oh, wow.
The day that she walked. And I like that because it was so beautiful there. It was fall, just like it is here.
Uh-huh.
And the leaves were orange and yellow and gold and rust. And, oh, so I took a lot of pictures, which is in the museum.
I can't wait.
So other people can come and see exactly what it looked like where she lived.
And you've met Bob Gimlin.
He was here the year before COVID.
Mm.
And he was our guest speaker for our conference that year.
Oh, okay.
One of them.
Yeah.
But he was certainly the main one.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So what was it like, you know, meeting the guy that was responsible for this footage? I bet. And he's super nice. He's been on my show. I had the greatest time talking to him. Just a great old gentleman, just a great guy.
Yes, I love him. He is so nice and so kind and so gentle. And it's funny because every now and then, about every 6 months or a year, he calls me up and this is what he says, "Hi, honey, how are you?" And then he says, "This is Bob Gimlin." I said, "Bob, nobody ever talks like you. I know." And then a couple times I've talked to his wife. She's really nice. And
yeah.
I said, "Well, I just thought you might like to know who's the other woman in his life. It's me." So we laughed. It was fun.
That's hilarious. It's you, his wife. Well, not that. It's his wife, you, and Patty are the women in his life.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
So tell me about the museum. Like, here we are. I mean, it's amazing. You walk in. I signed the guest book. We are in a room right now. I see Dr. Jeff Meldrum. I see, it's the bone room. Very
yes.
Good. Thank you. So we're in the bone room, and I see you've got President Teddy Roosevelt. You have a little display here about Vladimir Putin's sighting of a Yeti. Mike Johnson, Joe Taylor, Ron Moorhead, Smokey Crabtree, Jeff Meldrum. Dr. Jeff has got a display here, you know, and you put, and Richard Shule, and Igor Burtsev.
Mm-hmm.
Who's Igor? I don't know that
Igor
name.
Igor is an anthropologist, and he lives in Moscow. He's been a researcher for many years. I don't know exactly how many, but just a year ago, we brought him from Moscow to Nebraska.
Wow.
And that was really, really fun. He was so interesting. And with Igor, he also has been studying the phenomenon of the braided horses. They braid the horses' manes. And so he does Russia and Siberia and the countries that are kind of around there, and since 1965. And then Don Monroe, he has covered all the United States, Canada, and Alaska. So we had both of those guys here together. Well, that was an interesting conference. It was fun.
So you have all these people here, all these exhibits and everything, and you have the Bigfoot conference. It's almost like this is, I assume you're retired.
What's that?
from punching a clock during the day. I mean, this is your full time. This is you and your research and your museum.
Mm-hmm.
This is your full time life right now.
And my friends.
Yeah.
I have the best friends I've ever had in my entire life.
And people come visit you from near and far.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. We've had the biggest conference we ever had. I think that was when Bob Gimlin was here. We had over 750 people came from 14 different states just for that one conference.
And the next one's coming up in April.
Yes. We try and get it always the last weekend.
Mm-hmm.
It's the weekend after Easter.
Oh.
Because otherwise we're running into the prom, graduation, golf tournaments, track meets, everything you could imagine.
Baseball.
Yeah. And so it's really, I mean, you have to be like Houdini. And then, of course, don't forget Nebraska football.
Oh, right, right. I'm glad that was one of the reasons we came up this weekend is because, Huskers start in 2 weeks, three weeks. Yeah, it's coming up.
You don't want to screw up your life. Yeah.
Right. So, how many visitors do you have a year through here, do you think?
I don't know, because every year it's getting bigger.
Yeah.
And, of course, when the winter comes, it's slow.
Sure.
But yesterday I had a group of kids from the Y in Holdridge, mm-hmm. and they brought 44 kids at once. And I went, whoa, that's a lot of kids.
That's a lot of kids going through here. Were they pretty respectful? Were they?
They were excellent, and they asked really good questions.
Yeah.
And those kids are so smart. You know, a few days before that, I had a little kid here. He said, well, what do you feel about Patty's DNA? And I looked at him and I said, how old are you? He goes, 7.
Oh, and, boy.
And, you know, and he knew. He knew. Mm-hmm. And I hear kids all the time or say things similar to that. And it's just, and that's what I really, really like kids, because if you can get them interested in this or anthropology or biology or psychology when they're little, and encourage them and help them and get some books or movies or videos or take them to the conference.
Yeah.
You know, that's like a stepping stone right straight into college, right into doing whatever you love the most and getting paid for it. That's not bad.
Right.
But when it was me, when I was in high school, I never had one person ever, one, that encouraged me. That was my science teacher. Everybody else said, oh, you're crazy, you know, and you're going to flunk and all that stuff.
That's so funny.
I never had anybody to help me, so I want to help these kids.
Sure. Okay. Well, you were the same age when you started, when Edmund Hillary.
Absolutely. I'll never forget that. It was like it happened yesterday.
Well, these kids are going to come in here, and they're going to remember when they were 8, and they came to the Bigfoot. They saw the Bigfoot lady, and they talked to her, and they asked her the questions, and they went to the Bigfoot Museum.
Yep.
And then they're interested in science, and they're interested in zoology, and they're interested in just the weird stuff that's fun in the world.
Yeah, I know it. And you know what? When I started this museum, it's only not even 4 years ago now, just about everybody predicted that I would be a massive failure.
Yeah.
Especially when I started the first conference, because I did that like a year before, 2 years, I guess. And anyway, I felt like I was jumping into the shark tank, because that was a man's field.
Oh.
It was men. It was not me. And so, therefore, I would fail. But I hate that word. That's not my vocabulary. I am not a quitter.
No. No, not at all. And by looking around here, this is an absolute success. I mean, you have hundreds of people come through here every year, probably even more than that. You had 40 yesterday.
No, I had 50. They brought 6 adults, and they had as good a time as the kids did.
Right.
They did. And what I did with the kids as they were leaving, we gave them all a bracelet, and it said, Hastings, Nebraska. They were thrilled with that. But my friend, Joe Taylor, he has the biggest fossil museum in Texas. He sent me like little bit smaller than a sandwich bag, and every single kid, I gave him a bag, and it had shark's teeth in the bag.
Wow.
And they were just thrilled. And so I bet you some of those will be going to show and tell in September. I wouldn't doubt it a bit. But see, that's the way to get them hooked.
Yeah, sure. Let me ask you a couple questions about the creature, Bigfoot. Do you think it's, like an ancient creature that's kind of survived evolution, that's just on its own staying away from humans? Do you play into any of the theories that there's some outer space origins of Bigfoot, or you keep your mind open, or what do you think?
I try to keep an open mind, but every now and then I hear a door slam shut. But, this room, for example, is my bone room, and I've got different things in here. But I think somehow, I don't know all the pieces yet, but I think somehow it's related. And when you said an ancient man, you can go back even in America. The Indians were here way back when Christopher Columbus came. That's not exactly ancient, but still. And every time I hear about something like that, I've got a display here of woolly mammoth elephants and mastodons. And every time I see that display, I always think, I wonder if the Bigfoot were walking down the creek the same time those elephants were.
Yeah.
It was kind of a tropical country then. And just 45 miles from here, straight south of me, is the Republican River. And on the Republican, when I was 13 years old, I found a woolly mammoth leg bone.
Really?
Yeah, that's it right there.
Oh, wow. Well, there it is. You found that?
Yeah. And that was hard because I only weighed 54 pounds myself, and that weighed 13. But I'm probably the only person in the entire United States that you know that has had a woolly mammoth leg bone decorating their coffee table in the living room.
I can't imagine anybody else that I know that would have a woolly mammoth leg bone decorating their coffee table.
The very first thing that I ever put in the museum was my leg bone. I love that so much.
What do your neighbors think about the Bigfoot Museum? Is everybody pretty cool with it? They think you're nuts?
That's a nice way to say it, yes. It's really funny because not one of my neighbors have ever been in the door. Mm. Never. And I've invited them every time I have something, or come over, or, you know, whatever. And, okay, but they never do.
That's so sad to me because the place is amazing. I haven't even been through it. You haven't even walked me through the whole thing yet, but just walking through the door and signing the guest book and seeing all the pictures and the giant Sasquatch model in the front. I mean, it's amazing. How could you not want to go through here? People think I'm nuts all the time, and I'm fine with that.
I know, me too. I don't care. I've been called the worst names ever since I was 8, 9, 10 years old, and I don't care. It doesn't matter.
No.
And it's funny because the Bigfoot lady, when that started off, well, it was always kind of around, but when I had my first conference,
right,
the Bigfoot lady was definitely a slam. It was an insult.
Oh.
It was.
Oh.
That's a sneering. Yeah, you think you're the Bigfoot lady, like that.
Oh.
And I said, yep, I didn't care. And so after I had my first conference, we had it in a hotel. And I was supposed to tell them how many people I expected. Well, everybody told me I was going to fail.
Sure.
And I said, ooh, 25. I was thinking, on Friday night, if 25 people came, I would be so happy.
Right.
And as it was, 250 people came the first night. I was in shock. I just couldn't believe it. Because ever since I was 8 years old, I've heard how I was going to be a failure. And so the next day was Saturday, and Lyle Blackburn was our speaker.
Right.
Might as well start off with the best. And anyway, so they said, how many people do you expect on Saturday? And I was thinking, geez, I hope 100 come. And we had 450. And how I got my name then the Convention and Visitors Bureau called me up on Monday morning. And she said, Harriet, do you know what you have done? I was sitting there. I couldn't think what it was.
Oh, no. Did I break something? What have I done?
My head was whirling. I couldn't think. And she said, well, before the conference, you were called the Bigfoot lady around town. I said, yeah, that's okay. She said, now you are called the Bigfoot lady because you are the expert here. And I said, you're kidding. I said, how did I go in 2 days' time to being the failure of the world to the expert? That still surprises me. But I love that name, the Bigfoot Lady. First place, nobody can ever remember, so I don't care about that either. They just say the Bigfoot Lady. Yep, that's me.
Yeah, yeah. When people talk all the time about the Bigfoot Lady, I know exactly who they're talking about. There's no question who the Bigfoot Lady is. And I say that with the utmost respect.
Oh, yeah. I know it. I know it. And so that's, I love that name. That's the best one I ever had.
I think you should keep it.
I'm going to. Yep, that's me.
The Bigfoot Lady. I saw you on some video and somebody's like, well, here's Miss Bigfoot. And you're like, the Bigfoot Lady. You corrected the guy. Oh. Which I thought was fun. I thought that was super fun.
I know, and I have so much fun. You have to have fun.
Yeah, and that's because, you know, my show deals a lot with when it's not, sometimes it's true crime, but a lot of the time it's paranormal, it's ghosts, it's monsters and stuff. And that stuff and UFOs, and it's weird and it's kind of silly, but that's what it's great to explore those things. I love the mysteries of life, and and too many times people are like, well, that's crazy, that's stupid, that's a waste of time. And I don't see it that way, because it's having fun with the world around you, it's embracing nature, and I just love your spirit too.
Well, and when they say things like that, like, oh, this Bigfoot just a bunch of baloney, then I always say, how many books have you read on this subject? Well, I haven't read any books.
Oh. Yeah, so you already made up your mind.
Well, and also they don't know anything.
Sure.
Yet.
Yeah. They just think, Bigfoot man in suit. Why don't we have one in a lab yet? Well, read a book.
Yeah.
Study some of the history of it.
Yeah. I mean, and history goes way, way back.
Yeah, it starts way before, you know, Patterson-Gimlin. I mean, we mentioned Dave Politis a little bit ago. He wrote a book called Tribal Bigfoot, where he stayed with the Hoopa Indians in California for months and months and months and listened to all of their stories and listened to all of their folklore about brother tribe and how they lived with Sasquatch.
And they still do.
For generations.
Yeah.
So you're going to discount generational stories that have gone on for hundreds of years, passed down, still continuing to, you're going to just dismiss all that because you think it's crazy, because you think we're crazy. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
I'm crazy. That's fine.
That's true. You can go through all of the reservations, same way the Sasquatch, the Indians in Canada, goes back hundreds of years. They all do.
Now, you said something a little bit ago, made me feel sad. Being a woman, is it getting better, or do you feel like things are getting easier to be taken more seriously just because you're a woman?
I think it's a yes and no. It kind of depends on who's saying it. And I think every now and then, as I chuckle to myself, like a couple of weeks ago, I had this really big guy come in. Not a Bigfoot, but like a football player or something, you know?
Sure.
Of course, I'm only 4'10", so
right.
I'm like that. And he was really insulting to me. And I didn't like that. But I don't get mad. I didn't say anything nasty. But all I do is I just... And then I said, well, he told me I should get rid of some of my exhibits. And that made me angry.
This is just a guy that just came to visit the museum?
Yeah. I don't know who he was. I don't even know his name.
Yeah.
But, well, I will tell you this, and you can cut it out of the interview. He walked through, and he liked the museum.
Sure.
And he liked the exhibits and the pictures.
Yeah.
And afterwards, he came up to me, and he said, "Whoa, you know, I really like your museum." And I said, "Oh, thank you. That was nice. Appreciate it." He said, "But I do have some advice for you."
Oh.
Which, I get a lot of advice, and I like that.
Sure.
Because then I change something or add or whatever. And I said, "Oh, what's that?" He said, "Well, I have noticed that every now and then you have got something that refers to Christianity. Like my Bigfoot statue that's out in the garden. In Genesis 6, it says, he made them all." And he said, "I think you should go through and get rid of all of those sayings or verses that you have around." I said, "Oh, is that right? Why is that?" He said, "Because it offends some people."
Oh.
And so I puffed up and I said, "You know what? If I take those verses and things out of my garden in my museum, that really offends me. And the bottom line is, I'm not doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's not really a very constructive criticism, too, if it offends. You know, and that's without getting too deep into religion, I think it all plays together because when I talk to people about ghosts and these monsters and things like that, I just have kind of a blanket statement that it's not contradictory to believing in God or Christianity or anything. I just think that with God, all things are possible. All things are possible.
I was just going to say that. Yeah, that's right.
You know, so I think that just helps whether or not you believe in God or not, or it kind of, maybe it's a bridge to those people that I just have an open mind and I'm not closing my mind to something just because, because I might offend somebody. Well, you know, if it's important to me, I can think my own thoughts, you know.
That's so right. And yeah. I think because I'm so short, people tower over me.
Right.
And I think a lot of people think, you know, I'm not meek and I'm not mild, but I hope I'm not abrasive. I don't like that either. But, I've been trampled on my whole life and I'm not doing it anymore.
Sure. Yeah. Well, and this is your place.
Yeah.
It's your research.
Yeah.
It's your hard work.
Yeah. And my friends and my Bigfoot and whatever.
Oh, so you're 4'10".
Yes.
All right. So Bigfoot, an adult male Sasquatch, if you were traipsing around Colorado, is going to be about twice the size of you. If you saw one, first of all, you've seen Harry and the Hendersons.
Yeah, that's okay. A good one.
Yeah, I love that one. So what would your reaction be if you saw one? I just imagine you kind of like the Don Ameche character, like you finally see this creature right in front of you. Would you give it a hug? Would you run? What would you do?
I would be so happy.
Yeah.
Because where we are right here, mm-hmm. kind of central Nebraska,
mm-hmm.
we're in a perfect location. I know they are around here.
Mm-hmm. Now, why is that? Why do you think it's perfect location? Most people think Pacific Northwest or Florida with the skunk ape or...
That's true. But on the other hand, the publicity, I don't mean the bad, but the good, started there over 50 years ago. So they got a 50-year head start on us.
Yeah.
But I think here, we're only 14 miles from the Platte. To those guys, 14 miles, that's a big nothing.
Right.
The other thing is, right where we live, right here in Hastings, on one side of us, we have got the Big Blue River.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other side, we have got the Little Blue. And we're kind of right in the center of all of that. And on the really good documentaries, they almost always say they follow the rivers.
Yeah.
And I think that's true.
Yeah.
And I have a map out in my, kind of when you first enter the museum, and it shows just sightings in Nebraska. There's a lot of them here. And if you look, you'll see they're right, you know, near the rivers. So I think we're in a perfect spot.
Sure. I have a friend named Jamie who does, she has a business called Midwest Paranormal History Tours. And she leads people all around places in Omaha, mostly ghosts and paranormal and some true crime and murder stories. But she swears that you get into certain places in... people think that Nebraska and Iowa is just all farmland and just cornrows for you know, miles and miles and miles and miles. But they forget that, like, especially in Iowa, when you go further east, it's very densely forested.
Mm-hmm.
And Nebraska, a lot of Nebraska is the same way. So I don't know if Sasquatch could be, like you said, making their paths through the waterways, maybe migrating to Colorado or, you know what I mean? You just don't know. I mean, we don't know. We don't have enough evidence. And people like you are gathering the evidence. But to say that there's it's impossible that Bigfoot would be in Nebraska, I don't see that.
Well, and I don't think, it doesn't even have to be a forest. Especially now, it just occurred to me a month or so ago, I was driving down some little gravel road, and all over there are abandoned barns, chicken sheds, houses. You see a lot of old RVs and trailers all over. And if you just go about 2 miles south of Hastings here, is the old Naval Ammunition Depot where they made war bombs for World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go miles and miles. There's a lot of big, like three-story, huge, big brick buildings. And you go driving by, the doors on them are probably 25 feet tall, and they're wide open.
Yeah.
Probably been open for 50 years now.
Yeah.
And I thought, I have a friend that he goes out there all the time and takes his lunch at noon.
Uh-huh.
And a lawn chair. He says, I just sit there. He's seen mountain lions and bald eagles and bobcats and red foxes and coyotes and everything else just going in these buildings. And it's like, wish we could learn that. They all kind of respect each other. They've all got a little nest or whatever there.
Right.
And I thought, look how many places are like that all over the whole state. And I used to think that Bigfoot migrated also, because you look at Colorado, and they already had a lot of sightings on their map. So did Iowa and Ohio and all those places. But I don't think they leave here. I think they might go for a day or so. And like, for instance, I think they follow like the fruit trees.
Mm-hmm.
Like for a while, there's a lot of apples. Then they're kind of done. But then there's plums and strawberries, corn on the cob.
Oh, sure.
All kinds of things like that that's around here. Elderberries. I've got a zillion elderberries here right on the end of my house. And it looks a little bit like a jungle, but I don't care, because the squirrels eat elderberries,
mm-hmm.
the birds, the cardinals. I've got a lot of cardinals here. And, you know, does Bigfoot want to eat elderberries there? That's fine.
I love it. Well, this place is amazing. What I noticed that you got some friends here from Lincoln. They're working out front. They're working mm-hmm. around. And so I know you've got a project. You're building something with the garden, a path, or what's going on? What's the future of the museum looking like? What do you got going on?
It is changing every single day.
Yeah.
It is. The garden path, we just officially opened the garden April 21st. It's still a work in progress.
Mm-hmm.
But it came about because whenever we have a conference, we have like a little brochure, a program,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, the names of the speakers and all that. But on the back, we always have an evaluation for the conference and the speakers and all that.
Oh, that's smart.
Thing. Because if we're doing something that people really like, we'll keep on doing it.
Sure.
And if there's a suggestion or a complaint, I really pay attention to that also.
Unless it's a rude guy that just kind of...
that wants me to take down my verses. Mm-hmm. Not going to happen.
Right.
So anyway, this was about 3.5 years ago right now. And we have a lot of people that come that are handicapped. They're in wheelchairs and walkers and... a lot of people from group homes comes, mm-hmm. and a lot of veterans.
Oh, great.
People like that. And so anyway, you know, they're always welcome.
Mm-hmm.
They're nice people. And our speakers have treated them fantastic. I like that. And the people in my own group have too. But anyway, there's a lady, and she has been to every single conference I have had. She loves it, loves Bigfoot. Oh, she's my cheerleader. And so she has got MS.
Oh.
And she is in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
And she can still get around, but she's got an electric wheelchair. Anyway, so she wrote on the evaluation, oh, I love the speakers. They were so good. I was going, yes. And she said, and I really love the vendor. She said, I got new T-shirts and sweatshirts and DVDs and CDs and pictures and food and, you know, she named all this stuff. And I said to my friend, she bought enough T-shirts and stuff. That'll take her to the next conference. And and she liked everything.
Yeah.
And I said to my friend, I said, boy, we really knocked it out of the park this year. I was really happy. And then... with a red pencil, she wrote in letters about 2 inches tall, but. I said, how could she say but? She just said she loved this, that, this. And she wrote, but we want to go where you guys go.
Oh.
And we want to hear what you hear.
Mm-hmm.
Every now and then we'll hear one yell at us or something.
Yeah.
And she said, and we want to see what you see. And then she said, but the paths in the forest are not handicap accessible.
Sure.
Ooh, that just killed me.
Sure.
It did. I could not sleep
for
2 weeks thinking about that. And the one night I went to sleep, I woke up at 2 o'clock in the morning and I said, I know what the answer is. I know the answer. That was the day I started. The answer was that for 13 years, my husband and I did outdoor weddings in our garden. It's it's about maybe 1.25 acres, something like that. I don't know exact. And then before the conference, about 7 months before the conference, my husband died.
Oh.
That was the first disaster.
Sure.
Second one.
And was his name Dick?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw the museum was dedicated to him.
Yep. And he was not a Bigfoot guy, but he wasn't against it.
Sure.
And he said it's because, I don't really know that much about it.
Uh-huh.
So every time he went to the conference, I could see he was moving a little closer. But then, I had that first conference, and that was one that was going to be a failure, I'm glad it didn't succeed. But anyway, right after he died, it was only like 3 or 4 months. It was so weird. We had a tornado that went from west to east, right across our whole garden. It was gone just like that.
Oh.
Everything. All the trees, all the bushes. Trees fell down and smashed the pumps to my big waterfall and my little stream. Took out all my fences. I mean, it was just everything. It was a disaster.
Yeah.
And that morning, I looked out the window, my kitchen window in the front. It was perfect. I didn't have one leaf down. And so I looked out and I was saying, oh, thank you, God. I made it. And I walked out in the back and I couldn't believe it.
Oh, no.
And it was so depressing. I couldn't go out.
Right.
3 years, I did not ever, not one step in my backyard. I just couldn't do it.
Oh, that's crushing.
It killed me.
Yeah.
And so the first year I went to Colorado, when I saw my first Bigfoot, it was the 4th of July weekend and I was gone for 3 or 4 days or whatever. And I came back and every single big tree in my backyard was gone. It was gone. So I went to church and I said to some of these guys, did you cut those trees down in my backyard? Nope, nope, nope. I haven't been to your backyard for years.
Right.
I asked everybody I knew and nobody would confess. And so that's what I started doing. 3 years ago, three and a half, I started working to rebuild this entire garden. And I opened it this last April 21st. It's not finished. But when you go out there, this lady said, Shelley said, we want to see what you see. I said, okay, because I had plenty of pictures. So there's arches out there.
Yeah.
There's X's out there. There's a couple Bigfoot nests that I've seen myself on the Platte River in Colorado. I'm working on a burial mound.
Ooh.
Right now. I've seen those in Colorado and Nebraska. I've got a bone field, a killing field. When they eat lunch, I think they call in all their relatives for Thanksgiving dinner, and they eat, and they just throw the bones, and eventually it'll be like a mound. And so, I always get on my hands and knees. I want to see what they ate.
Yeah.
I always do that.
Right.
That's why people say, oh, you are really gross. And I don't care.
Well, now, okay. Do you have a Bigfoot bathroom?
No, but I do have lots of trees.
I just didn't know. You said you had a burial mound and a boneyard. I didn't know if you had like a pile of scat out there.
Oh, I found one the other day. And I've got one right over there, except my friend's got the all-time record. He found one 3 feet long. He did. And it was about as big around as an orange. And he wrapped it in cellophane.
What do you do with a giant 3 foot long?
Listen to this.
Bigfoot scat.
He varnished it and then he wrapped it in cellophane.
Of course.
And then he put it in his deep freeze.
Okay.
And if his wife ever found out, he would be the next person in the killing field.
I bet. He would be.
And so then his
home life would be scat. That would
yeah,
be
yeah, no kidding. But, and so anyway, I have all kinds of things as you walk around. And there's plenty of benches.
Yeah.
That, you know, people want to sit down and just enjoy the birds. Or there's places all around that they can do that. And over in this one corner, the whole thing is dedicated to the veterans.
Oh, I love it.
And it's got the symbol of Army, Navy, Air Force, all of the branches of the service.
Yeah. You know what I love about this story?
Huh.
How you're so welcoming and you're thinking about how to bring other people into this Bigfoot mystery.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what their age or their physical capabilities, you're welcoming as many people as you can into this mystery. And it's in a lot of ways, it's like because when you were younger and people, A, you're a woman, B, you're kind of short, you know, I mean, like people dismissed you and kind of shut the door on you and tried to stop you from your dreams or from your imagination, you know. So you've actually just kind of taken that and just welcomed everybody into the mystery.
Yeah. And
I love it. Yeah.
So I'll have to show you one little tiny thing. I wish this was on video.
Am I following you or are you bringing it in here?
I'm bringing it.
All right.
Okay.
What do you got there? What's this?
It's not scat. Okay. I had an experience not very long ago. It was so touching, it made me cry.
Okay.
I have a really, really good friend, and he was a minister.
Okay.
And
here you go.
Anyway, he is going blind. And it's so terrible because
I'm going to take a picture of you with that.
He always read the Bible all the time.
Okay.
And studied. And he was my friend. Well, he still is my friend. So anyway, now he said to me so many times, "Oh, Harriet, I wish I could see your museum." I know it's good.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Oh, and I wish I could see your garden too." And I said, "You would like it here." And so anyway, he called not very long ago and he and his wife asked me out for lunch. I said, okay. So I said, "I brought something for you out of my museum." And he said, "What's that?" And so I said, "Well, where he lives is really close to where they find the bones of the woolly mammoth, elephants, and the mastodons." And I said, "So Ivan, I brought a tooth of a mastodon for you to see."
Yeah.
And so I took his hand like this and I said, "Feel these ridges."
Oh, wow. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's his back molar right there. And see, a mastodon, they're the biggest of all of those animals. This is one tooth.
That's one tooth.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's about, I think, about a foot long or maybe a little longer.
Yeah.
And I said, "But the mastodon is the biggest elephant. And they're the ones," I said, "remember on the pictures they used to have those really, really, really long tusks?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, this is their tooth." And I said, "It's got ridges in it, but it's not sharp like a wolf or anything like that." I said, "But he is so tall, he takes his trunk way up and he breaks off the tree branches on the top and he chews them up and the branches are harder. Because the woolly mammoth is the littlest of all the prehistoric elephants. And so he is a grass eater. That's what he eats. And so his teeth are like a cow's tooth or like ours."
Right.
"But this one, he eats harder things. So that's why his teeth are not flat, that they're not pointed. But I don't know exactly how to describe it. But anyway, he took his hand over this back and forth so many times, and you know everything he felt. And he said, "Harriet, I know exactly what you mean." And he was sitting there and he said, I can picture that in my mind. Yeah. I can see it. And I said, I know you can see it because you're seeing it right now.
Yeah. See, what did I say? Like, you're welcoming everybody to the mystery.
Yeah.
I love it.
Just made me cry.
Yeah.
Because, you know, another guy had told me that. And I would have never thought of it myself. And it hadn't been a week. He invites me out for dinner. So I took my tooth.
I love it. So you just bring it to the restaurant?
Yeah.
You get taken out a lot.
No, not really. I did have somebody bring me...
I should have brought you some food.
Yeah, I know it. But anyway, I thought, you know, the more I think about it, I've got other things here mm-hmm. that I can show people.
Yeah.
And explain to them. And even if it's a kid, they can understand this.
Yeah.
Little kids can.
Sure.
So it's got to be careful so somebody doesn't drop it.
But oh, yeah. I'm
this
through.
This is another one of my prized possessions.
I love it. Where'd you get that?
This came from my friend, Joe Taylor, that has the Fossil Museum in Crosbyton, Texas.
Yeah.
And he made this cast. It's off of a mastodon. And that was part of my birthday present. And keep talking.
All right. Harriet's going to another... room of the museum. Oh, what's that? What you got there?
This is my birthday present. I always wanted this for my birthday. That is a woolly mammoth tooth.
No way.
And see, I found this leg bone
right.
of the woolly mammoth when I was 13. Ever since I was 13, I don't know why I wanted a tooth.
Just wanted a woolly mammoth tooth?
Yes. So...
Show, okay, what part... Go ahead with your story, but what are we looking at here? What's
these the, are the roots from one tooth.
Oh, okay.
This is the top.
Oh, wow. Holy cow. Where did you get this? Yeah,
I
yeah.
got that from...
From Joe.
Friend in Texas, Joe.
The Mount Blanco Fossil Museum in
yeah,
Crosby.
Yeah, because I told him 100 times I wanted a tooth for my... to go with my leg bone.
Mm-hmm.
And see, this is exactly... like a cow's tooth. Because, see, they don't need to have a sharp tooth. They're grass eaters.
Sure.
Basically.
Yeah.
And so I took this tooth. I took both of my teeth out to dinner. And so I said, well, my friend, he was a minister his whole life, but he was also a farmer.
Yeah.
And so he had cattle. And so I gave him this one, and he ran his hand down it. I said, that's exactly like a cow's tooth. They don't need sharp teeth. And so he's going, oh, yeah, that's right. That's yeah. He says, I know what that is. Because he always had cattle.
Yeah.
And so then if you, oh, by the way, feel how heavy that is.
Well, yeah, this thing's enormous. It's like the size of a, like a pie. It's like the size of a pie.
Yeah, except it's a heavy one.
Oh, yeah. There we go.
So anyway... So this is the top of the tooth. It would be like your back molars right here.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is the roots. They're almost, I'd say, about a foot long. And so with this tooth, about every 5 years, it wears out. So it just falls out. Just like we would lose a tooth.
Right.
And then if you look right below that, here's another set of roots. And when this one falls out... this is ready to come up. And so that tooth will last about 5 years also, and it'll fall out.
Amazing.
And see, here's another row of roots. And then they will come up. There's another row. So he's got about five sets of molars that can come up about every 5 or 6 years.
That's a much better piece of evidence or a much better scientific thing than a 3-foot-long piece of scat. That's right.
Oh, I loved that, though. That was fun.
Have you seen it?
Yeah.
He varnished it? And is it still in his freezer?
No, it's in his museum now.
He's got a museum, too?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. What's his museum about?
It's a Bigfoot museum.
Oh, of course, naturally.
But anyway, so they wanted... them or they wanted him to send them a sample of this scat but he had varnished it, and they were afraid that it would ruin the chemicals inside. So they said, no, just take and cut it in half. And I said, man, I wish I'd have been there to see that. But anyway, so he cut it in half. It looked like a summer sausage. So from now on, whenever you see a summer sausage, you'll think of me.
I will think of you and your friend with the giant, giant baseball bat-sized Bigfoot scat.
Yeah. So he cut it in half, and then they said, just send a slice in.
Yeah.
So the slice is, it's like a summer sausage, just about a half an inch thick.
Who would he send it to?
I think he sent his to Melba Ketchum.
Oh, okay.
She's well known in this circle. Yeah. I think. I'm not 100% certain. But anyway, so he wrapped it up in some kind of a container and sent it to them. And I haven't heard the results yet.
Oh, I can't wait to hear it.
But then, so now he had this huge scat in two pieces. So he just took some wood glue and glued it back together. And you would never know it. I sat there and I looked. I never could see where it was cut at. So it did. It only took, you know, like a half inch out of the whole length. And I said, boy, that guy must have felt better after that. That's all I can say. But that's the way the Bigfoot people
are. We are so weird. We are just a bunch of weirdos.
We are so much fun.
I know. It's the greatest life, right?
I know. And, you know, people say, are you going to retire? Are you kidding? Took me my whole life, till I finally am doing, that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
When I was 10 years old, I wanted to go to college. I wanted to be an anthropologist. I wanted to work in a museum, but I never thought ever it would be mine. Never.
Right.
Never. It never even occurred to me.
Work in a museum? Hell, you have your own museum. The only one within 500 miles of this, you know.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So that's why I've...
And you're known all over as the Bigfoot Lady. Yeah. Not just in Nebraska, not just the Midwest, not just the United States. You're known everywhere as the Bigfoot Lady.
In fact, my book is in Moscow, Russia, in their library.
That's amazing. What a great legacy.
Yeah. I thought that was...
Did you and Dick have any children?
No. We both got married. We were married later.
Mm-hmm.
And most all of his life, he was a Chamber of Commerce executive.
Yeah.
That's what he did. And me, I don't know what I did.
How'd you guys meet?
He was my boss.
Oh.
I went to work for him.
Yeah.
And we became friends.
Sure.
And I don't know. We were married just about 35 years when he died. So that was hard. But he was my good friend. And I know that everything that I have done here, the conference or the museum or the garden, he would be for me 100%.
I believe that.
He was never, you couldn't do that or it won't work. Or in fact, it was his idea for the very first conference. It was his. We were driving back from Arkansas that we would go down there to their conference.
Mm-hmm.
And on the way home, I was driving. We have a little dinky RV. And I said, I'm so tired of driving home. That's a long drive, 750 miles.
Oh, yeah.
And Dick, he just looked at me real calmly and he said, well, why don't we just have our own conference? And I went, what? I'd never even thought of it. And he goes, yeah. So next town, I pull in the gas station. I go buy a notebook and a pen. And he's taking notes all the way home. Who we want to be a speaker. Where we could have it at. You know, all kinds of things. Vendors. Well, he'd done that 100,000 times in the Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah, I was just going to ask.
Home shows and all that kind of stuff. And so by the time we drove 750 miles home, we had that whole conference figured out.
I bet you did.
Yeah. And we had just seen Lyle Blackburn in Hanobia. Let's see. Yeah, that's Oklahoma. And talked to him just briefly. We didn't know him.
Yeah.
And he was a nice guy and an excellent speaker and knowledgeable. That's all the things we wanted. And... So he was it.
What a great legacy you've got.
Yeah.
What a great legacy. I love it. And the fact that you and forgive me, but you know, at your age, you've got this conference just as big as you want it. You know, it's going gangbusters. You got your museum, you're expanding the museum. You're always trying to improve it and get things exactly how you want it. And there's no giving up. There's no quit.
No, I don't know that word.
No, I love it.
No, I don't. And, you know, for years, even before that, I taught classes in positive living.
Yeah.
And I use it every single day of my life. I'm always telling myself, there's a sign out there. It says 10 more steps.
I saw that right up outside the door, or right by the door. Yeah.
And people are saying, what's that? That means on the days I'm so tired or something, and I'm working really hard, I'll say, my wheelbarrow, I loaded up with cement blocks. And those things are heavy. And so I had 82 of them to unload. That first load almost killed me because I had to go clear to the back to my big waterfall.
Oh, yeah.
And I made it, oh, God. And then I said to myself, Harriet, can you do just one more load? I said, I can do one more load. So I go back, I get one more load. I take it over there, unload them, put it where I want. I said to myself, do you think you could do one more load? I said, yeah. That's how I unloaded 82 cement blocks.
Man, bless your heart.
And I said, can you just walk 10 more steps from there to there? That's all. 10 more. I said, oh, heck, I can do 10 more. So I did 10 more. And so whenever I want to quit, I always say, can you do just 10 more? Can you work just 10 more minutes and you'd have this or that done? I go, 10 minutes? I can do that.
Sure.
So I do. That's how I do everything.
Well, I haven't even seen all this museum yet, and it's the perfect mixture of professional and personal. That's what I love about it.
It is.
It's you, and it's also, I mean, we're just in this bone room, and it's filled with information. I couldn't read all this stuff in an hour if I wanted to. I mean, there's just this room alone is just crammed with information, and I love it. But it's so personal. It's so you.
I was like, it's called Really American Junk. No, that's me. Well, and you know what? Because I don't ever have any money to go buy things and stuff, what I did was, like, my fence is recycled. A guy, it was part of his and it got hailed out, so I took it. And the tree stumps that were left, I took those and made them into the legs for a lot of my tables. And the rest of them, I planted flowers in them. And, you know, people says, oh, I have this old thing, if you could have it. I say, yeah, I'll take it. And so there's hardly anything in here that's new. Oh, and the carpet?
Yeah.
That came from the old Holiday Inn.
Is that right?
Yeah, they were remodeling. And I just happened to be there.
Oh, well, it looks great.
Or something. And they had it all rolled up. I said, what are you doing with that carpet? And they said, oh, we're going to haul it out to the dump. I said, what if I haul it out instead for you?
10 more steps.
I had a little dinky pickup, and I recruited this guy who was not too happy to help me, but I needed somebody on the other end. So I brought all this carpet home.
I love it.
That's how it got here.
Well, I love this place. I haven't even seen it all yet. Harriet, I love you. I love talking to you. And you've just been an amazing guest. So I think what we're going to do is say goodnight to our listeners. And then I'm going to walk around this museum with you and take a bunch of pictures. How's that sound?
Ooh, that's good. You can, all the pictures you want, it'd be fine.
So listeners, when you're driving through the United States of America, this beautiful country of ours, and you happen to come across our beautiful state of Nebraska, stop by Hastings, Nebraska, to the Crossroads of America Bigfoot Museum and Research Center, hosted by Harriet the Bigfoot Lady. Harriet, thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. That was fun. Thanks. Yep.
Well, there we are, everybody. Episode 236 of Necronomicast with Harriet McFeely and the Crossroads of America Bigfoot Museum and Research Center. So next time somebody says, hey, Nebraska's flyover country, I suggest you get in your car and you drive through it and you stop in Hastings and say hi to Harriet. The best thing for me about that interview was talking to her and listening to someone who, early in life, she was told, nah, you're not going to go to college, or you can't be a museum curator. And you know what she did? She just opened up her own museum anyway. Love it. Thank you, Harriet. Next up, next week, the next episode of Necronomicast features Alex Matsuo, the creative force behind the spooky stuff. Can't wait for you to hear that conversation. That'll be episode 237, dropping next week on my October programming. Can't stop, won't stop. We keep on to the break of dawn, so you better get some sleep. Thanks for listening, everybody.